Greetings. This is Building Bridges, produced by Ken Nash and Mimi Rosenberg.
The case now in its 50th year of decolonization for Puerto Rico before the United Nations.
The last time I saw you, Anna,
Yes. We
were also at this very same spot in front of the United Nations. There were a number of women that were dressed up as Loleta LeBron, of course, the wonderful poets. It was also the case of colonization before the United Nations. So here we are on the 50th year of the case, and also the 100th year of the anniversary of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party. What is happening today, and what is the case now? Where is it at? You are?
I'm Ana Lopez from El Frente Independentista Boricua, which is a front of a coalition of organizations. We have 15 organizations in this coalition, and we've come together to bring the idea that people should support in the diaspora the independence of Puerto Rico as the only formula for decolonization. According to international law, is the Puerto Rican people have a right to independence. I know there's other forces trying to promote statehood, but statehood is not a right. We don't have a statehood right, but we do have an inalienable right to independence according to international law. So we're here, various people that came from Puerto Rico, to raise the issue of the colonial situation in Puerto Rico, which we're in a worse situation now because Puerto Rico is being run by the Fiscal Control Board. It's not even by the...
Called the Junta?
The Junta. What we're having here is a rally to bring attention that Puerto Rico has been in front of the UN for 50 years already. This is the fourth decade, international decade, for the eradication of colonialism, and still the case of Puerto Rico has not been resolved. The rally is to bring attention to that and also to denounce the presence of Ricardo Rosselló, the governor that was forced to resign from office in 2019. We say, what the hell are you doing here and sitting in this international forum?
And what happened when he spoke before the body?
Everyone else stood up and did a walkout as a form of protest. The people who walked out were all people that have come every year to the UN. They represent all faiths, all faces of life in Puerto Rico, the economic, the social, the political, and they're very concerned about ending this colonial status. So 25 people got up and basically left the assembly empty when he was speaking.
What's the politics now behind being at the UN? Is it a symbolic gesture, or do you have any real sense that as an international body that you can get it to actually take a truly anti-colonialist stance? And allow self-determination for the Puerto Rican people?
The pandemic slowed us down a little bit. In 2020, a rapporteur was sent to Puerto Rico to submit a report. Every resolution that is passed by the Decolonization Committee is submitted to the General Assembly, and also the rapporteur's report on the colonial conditions. And they concluded that conditions are even worse right now in Puerto Rico than ever, because there is no local control of politics and the economy of Puerto Rico. It's all being done by the Junta, which is a body that was not elected by the Puerto Rican people. So our colonial situation is worse. And what's happening right now, that Puerto Rico is being sold off. And we have a huge problem with our beaches being sold off. Lands are being sold off to rich people from the United
States. You're suggesting that it's being made into a haven for tourists.
For tourists and people who want tax to one. They don't have to pay taxes if they buy land in Puerto Rico. And we're saying that Puerto Rico belongs to the Puerto Rican people. It is our land, and we want all those people to leave the islands. We've already been displaced. 6 million Puerto Ricans live in the United States, 3 million in Puerto Rico, and by the year 2040, they're estimating there will be a reduction to 2 million people. So there is an attempt to displace the Puerto Rican people, and we call that ethnic cleansing.
What's the correlation between the action here today and the fact that we are, or should be, celebrating a 100th anniversary of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party?
The importance of celebrating the 100 years of the Nationalist Party is that really what put setting forth this revolutionary process and the fight for independence was primarily with the leadership of Don Pedro Albizu Campo. And we call him El Maestro, the teacher. He really set the standard. He set the road for national liberation. And that's why we got to honor the political party that he belonged to. And we got to honor him because he really put Puerto Rico nationality, language on the map.
And the correct positioning of North American supporters of this effort before the UN, the 50th anniversary of the case of decolonization of Puerto Rico before the UN, and the issue, which of course continues to be pushed, of statehood. What should people of North American sympathy who consider themselves anti-colonialists, how should they view the issue and support the Puerto Rican people?
Our allies and supporters in the American people should support our right to independence, for our right to have our own language, culture, and identity, to stop the displacement of us in our own territory, but also not to get confused and think that statehood is something that is a civil right. We believe statehood is the culmination of colonialism. It will be the extinction of the Puerto Rican people as a people. Statehood is not what we want. We want to retain who we are as a people. So they should support independence and not statehood.
Your thoughts about the positioning of people like Nidia Velasquez, who are in the Congress, do you support their efforts before the Congress?
They have good intentions, but the bill that they're proposing does not satisfy international law. According to international law and the decolonization process, it says that Puerto Ricans have to be given the transfer of power, that there has to be the elimination of all those institutions that impede our process of self-determination, meaning you have to remove all the federal buildings in Puerto Rico, the federal government, the police, the Navy, the Army, all that is U.S., that impedes our process of self-determination. And the United States has not complied with any of those prerequisites that need to be done. No, the bill doesn't even mention the transfer of
power. So
you
think it's actually co-opting the effort towards independence?
I'm just saying that it's like an exercise that they're doing. And the only thing that I find that has been positive is that the issue of Puerto Rico continues to be in Congress and is being debated. But it does not, that bill does not push forward the independence of Puerto Rico, which is the only inalienable right that we have, and it's the only formula for decolonization.
Ana is with El Frente and has been organizing for how many years?
The Frente is a new attempt to unify all the forces for the independence of Puerto Rico, but I've been doing pro-independence work almost all my life, for almost 50 years.
Hasta la victoria siempre.
Hasta la victoria, gracias. Thank you,
thank
so,
you
much.
So much for speaking with us. So we've got the backdrop of the 100th anniversary of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party and the 50th anniversary of the case of decolonization before the United Nations, which might make some people rather cynical, but who are you and what brings you to this rally?
Yep. I'm Richard Lopez Rodriguez, a member of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party.
So I want to know, from why not statehood, why the case for independence from Puerto Rico?
It's a really tricky question, right? Because 124 years have gone by. But historically, let's look at the results. How far the Puerto Rican people has gone in the 124 years of colonization with the United States. Hawaii and Alaska became states in the 50s, and Puerto Rico didn't. So you see that there's an interest of the United States of exploiting Puerto Rico, but not recognizing Puerto Rico in no spectrum, not even as a free nation or not even as a state. That's in our reality as inheritance of the big era that the United States did, which was invade an autonomous nation in 1898. That's what Puerto Rico was at the moment. 124 years later, we're still getting displaced. We're still under big red numbers of poverty. We're still getting any type of testing that the United States decides to do. They initiate all their testing in Puerto Rico. We have the samples of sterilization of Puerto Rican women. We have the sample of cancer, the bombarding of Vieques, and et cetera. Maria, how they just neglected the Puerto Rican population after the hurricane and left them to die. And many things that the austerity measures with the PROMESA bill that is leaving our people without homes, without jobs, and just displacing us through all the poverty pockets within the United States. Puerto Rico, I see that in the United Nations, they talk about a migration crisis. Puerto Rico has been suffering a migration crisis since 1898, since the United States stepped foot in Puerto Rico. We've been getting displaced and being put in poverty pockets within Chicago, Boston, New York, Florida, and that's a reality today. What's interesting about the Puerto Rican nation is that we affirm our nationality with any part of the world where we're from or where we at. For that reason is why we don't advocate for statehood, because it's detrimental and it's an assassination of the Puerto Rican nationality.
If you were young, is that somewhat of the sentiment of the youth of the island as well?
To be honest, it's incredible. In the last 15 years, there's been an increase in people wanting at least to have the conversation, considering independence as a method of relieving the hardship in Puerto Rico. Compared to when I was growing up, it was like totally taboo just to talk about independence. And now people are starting to open up and consider at least independence as an option for the Puerto Rican future. Bringing to the idea of the United Nations, as people, we don't have much hope in the United Nations, because the United Nations for years has been a bias to the United States. And you see how today the United States is campaigning in favor of Taiwan, in favor of Ukraine, but it forgets its obligations with Puerto Rico. We have seen, especially as you mentioned, the Nationalist Party is over 100 years. And in the late 40s was the Nationalist Party that asked the United Nations to have a chairman for Puerto Rico as an observer within the organization. It's the same era that United States was cooking up the false commonwealth that we live in today, that it was nothing more anticipation for robbery of a nation.
Well, I thank you, and que viva Puerto Rico libre.
Que viva. Thank you.
Thank you. I'm with Digna Sanchez, and I want you to help us make the case, the 50th anniversary of the case for decolonization before the UN. It's also the 100th anniversary of the Puerto Rican Nationalist Party. So your positioning.
I'm here representing Friends of Puerto Rico Initiative, and I'm also a member of the Movimiento Independentista Nacional Ostosiano in Puerto Rico. I felt the message that I wanted to give today was that I was here in 1972 when I was 25 years old, and I spoke at the rally that we had, that for the first time we appeared before the UN. And 50 years later, I'm here again today. And my message was, because I hear a lot of young people say, oh, this is taking too long. Well, you know what? It's going to take long, and we can't give up. We can't say we're tired, because we have to have a conviction that we continue, we are going to win. It took the Irish 780 years to free themselves from the United Kingdom, from Britain. I don't hope for 780 years for that, let me tell you. But it's a message of the importance of sticking to an ideal.
And the ideal of independence versus statehood or a commonwealth, what does that mean?
This is a centenary struggle. The importance of independence is, first of all, that's an inalienable right of all people to be free, okay? And we are a distinct nation. We have a distinct culture. We have a history as a people, and we don't need someone else to be telling us how we should run our country. You know, the United States tried, once they came and invaded, and to outlaw Spanish. They outlawed our flag. They have tried, okay? And I grew up in New York City, okay? My family brought me here in 1951. So I grew up in New York City, and from New York City, yo todavía hablo español, okay? Because in my house, we spoke Español. And I always said, my country is Puerto Rico. And I'm here because of colonialism, because my father, after he came back from World War II, we were campesinos. My family were agricultural workers in Puerto Rico. And in 1951, they brought, you know, the family to New York. In 2014, I returned to Puerto Rico. And I now live in Puerto Rico. You know, that land represents my heritage. It represents my people and where we have the right to develop our culture and to rule ourselves.
Is it a matter of self-determination, or obviously not, from the way you're sounding, it's a matter of independence? So how do you organize, and how is the organizing on the island going with the younger population to enculturate them with the message of independence?
Well, you know, one of the most beautiful things that I have seen since my return to Puerto Rico was that I experienced two hurricanes. I had never lived in Puerto Rico. I had never experienced hurricanes the way you experienced them in Puerto Rico. And the Hurricane Maria brought our people together. And the people, especially young people, saw the United States didn't come to our rescue. There are still roofs without, you know. It took forever to get, it was first the diaspora Puerto Ricana that brought the first supplies to the people in Puerto Rico. And that sent a damn big message to the people in Puerto Rico. We help ourselves. A lot of young people going into agriculture, because our agriculture was taken from us. We import 80% of our food in a country that is very fertile land that we could grow. Before, we used to feed ourselves before the Americans came into Puerto Rico, and we can continue to do so. So these are all the messages that are reaching our young people, and I think that's very powerful, especially the impact of Maria when they saw that they were not getting the help.
The case before the UN, is it something that just is a political must, or is there some kind of optimism and something that you think really is gained in the international political sphere by continuing to plow away at this juncture, 50 years, the case of decolonization before the United Nations?
Absolutely. This is a changing world, and this world takes time. We celebrate the elections in Colombia. We celebrate the changes that have happened in Latin America. There will be a report in terms of the resolution and the support, and the support has grown over the years. But this is not just about a plus or minus thing of how many support and don't support. Because the oppressor that controls us is the strongest imperial nation in the history of the planet. So this is even bigger than David and Goliath's story, okay? And it's going to take time. That's why our people need to know it takes time. And as Fidel often said, la revolución es el arte de unir fuerza, y hay que unir esa fuerza. And Latin America is our, that is where we belong, that is our context, and the Caribbean. And today, to have another Caribbean nation support the resolution, that's big. Okay, and to have Bolivia support, these are all steps. Obviously, Venezuela also spoke, they support Nicaragua, Cuba, but, you know, we keep adding, and that's, it's la revolución es el arte de unir fuerza. Decolonización es el arte de unir fuerza also.
And finally, your message to North Americans who are listening to support the struggle for independence for Puerto Rico.
Well, I think that you should support. It's a human right. It's an inalienable right. And just as, you know, going back to the, quote, founding fathers, because they never talk about the founding mothers, but, you know, they went to, they fought for independence from Britain. And that was their right. And we have a right, too, to develop our nation, our culture, etc. And support us.
I support. And what about you? What are you doing? What are you? What kind of work or what are you involved in, aside from 100 political issues?
Well, you know, I retired in 20.
Did you really?
Well, I retired from my salaried work. I am now on pension and Social Security, and now I get to do all the things that are in my heart, which I always used to do anyway,
of course,
after work hours. So now, very happy that I was one of the founders of the Women's Foundation in Puerto Rico. We just founded it in 2019. I work with El Ming. I work in New York with Friends of Puerto Rico Initiative, believe it or not, even though it's by Zoom. And of course, I support many other causes, Palestine, just so many causes. I'm a feminist, and so the issue of women's reproductive justice is critical for me. In the 70s, we led the battle against sterilization abuse, and now this whole thing of returning, knocking down, I mean, it's taking us back to the Middle Ages for women. So that, for me, is a big issue as well, okay?
Your energy, your fervor, your beauty, your soul, your phenomenal politics. It's an honor speaking with you. It really is. Digna Sanchez, thank you for your decades and decades of perseverance, righteous humanity for the independence of Puerto Rico and for human life.
Thank you.
Thank you, really. I am quite honored.
All right.
So I'm here with Rebab Abdulhadi, who is certainly one of the most intrepid freedom fighters I have ever met, and a Palestinian activist. And so the correlation between a free, free Palestine and an independent Puerto Rico. What brings you here to this?
Of course. Both people suffer from settler colonialism, U.S. colonialism in 1898 of Puerto Rico colonizing Puerto Rico, and before it, the Spanish colonialism, Spanish settler colonialism from 1492. And for Palestine, the Zionist settler colonialism, the British colonialism, but that's one aspect of it. The second aspect of it is the repression of the two communities. Third aspect of it, the fact that we both suffer from neoliberalism and unrestrained greed. And fourth is the solidarities that connect our people together and our struggle for justice for both people. If we struggle, Puerto Rico wins, Palestine wins. And if Palestine wins, Puerto Rico wins. So we definitely have a lot of connections. One of the biggest issues is the prisoners question. I mean, the question of long-term Palestinian prisoners, long-term Puerto Rican prisoners, and attacks against the movement because they want to criminalize, repress, survey, and spy upon the movements in order to actually silence. The more we achieve, the more the nastiness and the bullies get bullier, get nastier, and so on. Both movements are experiencing the same, very similar thing.
Two wings of the same bird, so to speak.
I would say, well, yeah, I mean, two wings of the same bird. I don't know if it is, it's Puerto Rico, Dominican Republic, and Cuba, or is it Haiti? But there are definitely there are a lot of similarities, and there is a lot of solidarity between the two movements. I mean, we saw Oscar Lopez Rivera. He was released, and then he goes on to hug Rasmiya Odeh, former Palestinian political prisoner who was being deported from the U.S. We see Hartford 15, and they were arrested. They're telling Lenny Wineglass, go defend the Palestinian, LAA, they need you more than we do. We saw historically Puerto Rican kids going at the University of Puerto Rico, taking down the American flag and putting the Palestinian flag up. We see the solidarities from Palestinians to Puerto Rico in everything the Puerto Ricans do. We're always there, and we are always in solidarity and supporting. So there is definitely repression, a lot of analysis of repression. There is definitely a lot of solidarities and struggle joint. It's not exactly the same, but definitely it is part of the overall struggle of all people for liberation, for justice, and freedom for one is definitely going to be freedom for the other.
Are you optimistic about the youth activism in Palestine now, given the incredible repression and expropriation of the land and nothing short of ethnic cleansing as a major ideological sway, erasure of the people, the message, the culture of Palestine? That's a lot.
Yes.
But you're saying you are optimistic.
I'm very optimistic. I mean, this is actually really, it's a message that after over 100 years of Zionist colonialism, we're seeing Palestinians, the Zionist movement wanted to have a land without people for a people without a land. And here are Palestinians louder than ever, stronger than ever, fighting. The younger people, the old maid have died, but the young have not forgotten. And people are every single day coming up with more creative ways to resist, whether it is standing on their land, whether speaking up, whether actually and not abandoning their principles, actually insisting on the principles and being able to honor the struggle and continuing despite all the repression that our people are subject. Definitely, I'm very optimistic.
Well, Rabab Abduhadi, has some of the pressure and tension eased on you in terms of your teachings and instructions and mentoring at your university in California?
Unfortunately, they haven't eased up, but we've actually achieved major victories. In the last period, we've achieved 3 major decisive victories when our colleagues, faculty, union grievances, and so on, we won every single one of them decisively. Our colleagues ordered the university to apologize to me and my colleague Tomomi Kinakawa for silencing, shutting down our classroom, whose narrative, gender, justice, and resistance conversation with Leila Khaled. They demanded that the university hold the webinar ASAP without delay, and they demanded that the university actually build the Ahmed Studies program. It was the basis on which I actually joined San Francisco State and left my position at University of Michigan Dearborn as the director of Center for Arab American Studies. So our colleagues actually stood with us, sided with us, ordered the university, and the university doesn't know what to do with itself. So the university president vetoed the decisions in a very undemocratic fashion, authoritarian fashion, neoliberal, corporatized fashion, and so on. However, our students are struggling. Our faculty is struggling. We are struggling. The community is coming together, and so on. And I do believe, look, bullies get bullier. The more we succeed, the more they're going to get more vicious. So we're going to see worse and worse and worse. But we're determined. We're here to stay, and we are determined to continue fighting for what's right and what's just, in solidarity with everybody who's actually supporting us.
Rabab Abduhadi, you are an inspiration. You are a spark of life and love and righteousness in the world community. Thank you for all that you do.
For Building Bridges, I'm Mimi Rosenberg.
And I'm Ken Nash.
Continue to educate, agitate, and organize to empower we the people.